through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter. Yay. With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
Camp Nut Butter, thank you so much for being our guide, our angel, home every single night. Bless you.
Man, I'm really actually jealous of y'all's faces on the sticks. And the twister is pretty amazing. Nutter Butter for life.
Sorry, I'm just a little depressed.
Because it's over?
It's a little sad. Okay?
I feel it.
My heart's still beating for you. Even though you don't feel it, it's still beating for you.
I miss you already.
I miss you already, Bonnaroo. The What Podcast, a podcast for you, the Bonnaroovian, or maybe a future Bonnaroovian, by us, the Bonnaroovians. It's Barry Corder from the Chattanooga Times Free Press and Brad Steiner from WDOD Chattanooga Hits 96. Another year in the books. We got a lot to, I guess, review, a lot to go through, but I think that we should probably start, and if you haven't listened already, I suggest that you hit pause on this right now and go back and listen to Ken Weinstein, who was live at Camp Nut Butter with us for a couple of hours. He hung out with us for a while, and mostly just to drink the moonshine,
yeah.
But then decided to actually do an actual show with us, and we learned so much from him. I can't say enough about how the guys from AC, this might just be their natural disposition, but they're so unbelievably gracious, they're so kind, and they're so able to talk to us about things that I just assume that they just don't usually talk about with anybody else. And luckily they talk to us about it.
Yes.
And because of that, we gain so much perspective on the inner workings and how this whole thing comes about.
I totally agree. And I mean, to be honest, the guys from AC have always been nice, from Ashley Capps on down, and in some ways they're just up the road in Knoxville. They have business dealings with some of the venues here, so that connection's a little more natural.
Sure.
Ken, on the other hand, swims in pretty deep waters, as do those guys, but he's a New York guy, Big Hassle Media up there.
I guess when I hear Ken Weinstein, I just assume he's AC Entertainment as well, but he's not necessarily.
He's not. No, he's not. And you can hear that in the podcast. But he's the guy who runs the media, and he's the guy my contact. And so, to be honest, when I asked, if he would do the podcast, mm-hmm. and he was so enthusiastic, I was thrilled. And then, you know, I thought, well, let's just go big and ask him to come to the camp. And he did, and I think he generally had a great time. And but you're right. The information that we get from those guys, I mean, I've had a week. You've had a week. There's so much rattling around in my head about how that whole weekend went.
That's right.
And that was such a big, big part of it.
And, you know, now this is 2 years in a row where basically the highlight of my weekend was somebody coming to camp and doing an interview with us.
Yeah, well.
I don't know why that was, but like Ken coming back, first off, to get them off of the grounds because they're so busy,
right.
To get them off the grounds and back to camp is unbelievable.
Exactly.
And then to spend as much time as he did and then be as open and willing to talk to us as he did, that, I mean,
exactly.
Go, yeah. I don't want you to stop listening to this, but I'm suggesting you hit pause, come back to this, and then go listen to Ken Weinstein or make it a point before next year to listen to it because it's so informative and it gives you so much perspective that just adds to the Jeff Cuellar chat that we had at the beginning of the season.
Exactly.
It's a nice way to round out the entire series of season two.
It all keeps adding up. I totally agree. And you get, like you said, the insight. I mean, and I think part of it, and it's not to pat us on the back so much, but I think it fits into that, is I think they realize the passion we have. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Well,
he
hell,
sees it.
Sure as hell hope so.
Yeah. But I mean,
we don't do this just, you know, because we're getting paid.
I know, but that's it's that level of, you know, just even going out into the beer exchange with those guys. I mean, there is passion all over that place for this festival. And it was just huge.
So let's start with the beer fest. Since now that you've listened to Ken Weinstein, hopefully now you're back. Let's start at the beer exchange with the Camp Redaroo guys. Boy, I did not expect that. I did not expect what I was walking into. I mean, it was fun to be like amongst where Bonnaroovians are, where we usually aren't.
Right.
That was pretty great to begin with. But secondly, how big that thing has become. It was mayhem. organized mayhem, but mayhem.
That was the thought, and not specifically to Retaroo, but that was the thought I had driving over here, and even yesterday when we thought we were going to record this yesterday, is, Brad, you and I have done this now 14, 15 years, and I think you commented some months ago on one of these podcasts about how it felt like, it didn't feel like it was that big,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we kind of realized it was all the new people. When you walk in with fresh eyes, how massive it is. My takeaway this year was, it just gets bigger. I mean,
which part?
Everything. The walking it, obviously, which we can make fun of me here in a little bit, because I think that's one of the themes from this year, is that you and I had some moments that are probably not our proudest. Me sitting in a chair, girl talk is not my proudest, but we'll go over that in a minute. But but so mentally, I kind of know the rhythm of it. I know every year it's the same sort of
thing.
So in that sense, it got smaller, but physically the size of it. But when we went out to Camp Retaroo for that beer exchange, it just reinforced how massive everything is, mm-hmm. and how many people, how many moving parts. And even more than that, a month ago, you and I were, I think we had our list, if not written down, at least in our minds, of all the things we were going to do. You can't do it all.
Yeah.
You can't come close mm-hmm. to doing it at all.
Yeah, and just getting to Camp Retaroo in and of itself was a chore. I mean, and had we not had, and I hate to say this, but had we not had a cart, we might not have just, we might have just bailed and walked away because we had so much gear that we had to carry in. And, I mean, we were driving around camp pods. Yeah. I mean, for 20 minutes looking for
camping. Thank you to Dana at Kaleidoscope for making that happen. That cart was, whew.
So then
we wouldn't have made it. We'd have turned around.
Then you find it. I'm looking back on it, it's pretty stupid how we couldn't find it, because you just look for the mass of people.
Yeah.
I mean, there was probably 200 people exchanging beers from all around the country, which was just phenomenal. Yeah. It was really, really well done. And then in the little, behind the little DJ booth there, is a pontoon brewing a bar that included the beer that was made for Camp Retaroo and made for our buddies at Repeat Repeat, both of which were phenomenal. And because of that beer share, I want to now drive to Sandy Springs, Georgia and see Pontoon Brewing just to, you know, support those guys, because they're doing really, really fun things. If they're willing to get out on board with guys like Repeat Repeat and Camp Retaroo, I want to support them too. Anytime I've got a chance, I want to drive to Sandy Springs.
And I think you made that point during the podcast of again, the guys at AC and Superfly. If you've got a good idea and it's crazy enough, they're open to it.
They're open to it.
If it fits the mission, they're open to it.
Man, that is God, that's such a great point. I didn't even think about that, because that is the mark of a totally secure brand.
Yep.
I mean, think about all of the people that you probably run into who are so massively insecure just as people. Now imagine brands being insanely insecure. You can't touch this. You can't do that. You can't air this podcast.
Right.
Because it talks about, never mind. But the insecurity of brands is just rampant. The security that they have of theirs to allow, you know, us to do this and insert people to do this at parties and artists playing in campsites. That's phenomenal, man.
That's what I meant about it got bigger this year. It just layer after layer of things you don't even, I mean, we are so insulated in our little world at Camp Nut Butter that was sort of my takeaway, is there are things going on that we don't even know about.
Right.
They're cool things, and I wish we had more time.
I know, I do too.
There's so many things we didn't do.
Well, you want to start with your hits, or you want to start with your misses? You want to start with the misses, since we're already talking about the things we didn't do?
Yeah, I think, well, and I asked you this the other day. Let's just start here. Did anybody go to see Jim James?
Man.
It never came up.
It never even came up. It never even came up as a conversation.
And I don't mean to pick on Jim James. It was just, that's a highlight. But it was just, I got home and I was like, what did we, there was something big.
I
that
totally
we didn't
forgot
even
about Jim James. I know.
Forgot about it.
All right, so I don't even know where to begin. So first off, here in a little bit, we're going to talk to Bishop Briggs and Quinn 92. I think that we go into this thinking that we're going to put all these up immediately. But, you know, because service is tough and because the, you know, schedules are weird, we can't get some of these chats that we have immediately up. I wish that we could, you know, but we have a staff of, you know, 2.5.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and the half is, you know,
floating.
Yeah.
Changes.
Yeah, it changes by the hour. So we can't get everything up that when we want it to. So I guess we just sort of reserved the Bishop Briggs and the Quinn 92 chats for today. We'll talk to them here in a second. Basically, it was their experiences on site. One of which was me destroying Bishop Briggs' dressing room. We'll talk about that here in a second. But let's start with the misses, the things that you wanted to see, the things that you meant to get to, and you never got to.
Oh man, Maren Morris.
You never got to Maren.
Didn't get to that.
Which she had a moment. She had a moment on stage, basically calling out the entire industry, calling out the country music industry. In fact, I had dinner with her on Thursday, and she said that was one of her favorite moments in her career because she finally got to talk about the guy who would not play her and said that she was never going to work in country music. I thought that was phenomenal.
Yeah, I thought that was, I mean, hearing about it is terrific. Didn't get to see her. God, who else? I don't even have the list.
You had Jim James, of course.
Jim James, because that was opposite John Prine.
Again, the reason why you find that to be such a miss is because when you went back to camp, you know, some people went to some shows, some people went to another. We didn't hear the name Jim James once.
Not once.
In the entire festival. And it wasn't like one of those things like, oh man, somebody comes back to camp, just saw Jim James. We didn't hear anybody go to him. Now, this is all like in a vacuum, I understand. Like, so somebody's experience might be different, but it was like a day after where we all said, oh yeah, Jim James is there.
Right, right. Miss for me, I did a walk by with Cardi B. I wish I had gotten closer.
No, you don't.
Well, you don't. I think for the experience. I think that's going to be one of those talked about shows. Good, bad, whatever.
Yeah.
Everyone, when I got home, everyone.
Everyone's talking about it because of the wardrobe malfunction.
Exactly. They want to know if I was there for the wardrobe malfunction.
Yeah.
So,
big miss for me. This really hurts to say it. I preached and preached and preached and preached, and I judged you if you were, yes, called you a bad person. I said everything in the world. If you were to miss John Prine, well, let's hear it, because I totally forgot. I totally forgot.
Did you go to the National?
Of course I went to the National.
Yes. That was the other one, Don't Miss, and Post Malone. I missed both of those.
I'll tell you why Post didn't do anything for me here in a second, but I missed John Prine, and I really feel bad about it. And you went to it and had a ball.
It was terrific. It was amazing. Brandi Carlile sang with him, and I wish I probably should look it up. The girl who sang with him on In Spite of Ourselves did the Iris DeMint version. She was terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Prine... And I've heard so many people say this. Prine just looked like he was having a ball.
Really?
Absolutely.
I saw that picture you took. It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. That look on his face,
smile.
He looks so happy.
Yeah. And I think part of it was last year with Angelique Kidjo, it was this way, though not to the size. And I've never really noticed it before, but you can tell by the number of label people that are backstage.
Mm-hmm.
And the Prine one was packed.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like all of the industry was back there. And I think he obviously picked up on that, but the crowd, when I actually walked up 10 minutes before, it was kind of light. And then all of a sudden I turned around and it was packed. What a great show.
Well, I mean,
that's my point though. You can't see and do everything. That's been my takeaway from this year.
Yeah. I tell you, I had just finished with Quinn 92. I had gotten into a conversation. I walked by Casey Musgraves, and it was on the way back to camp, and I just forgot.
Yeah.
I totally, totally forgot. And, you know, my mind was in the one place of just get back to camp, reset, get a bite to eat, and then get back to for the National. And I just totally forgot about John. Probably like a total dope.
I did it.
All right, so that was my big miss. Now, I will say this in a different version of a miss. I saw this year more bad shows than I've ever seen a Bonnaroo.
Agreed.
I might have seen more bad shows this year. Now, granted, I saw some great stuff, and we'll get to the great stuff first. I want to get all the negativity out. And
sure.
I said this on the show that we had at camp. I don't like talking down and about shows, and I don't like talking bad about artists, especially when they're on the farm. It feels almost... it makes me feel a little gross. I don't want to like start dogging people out while they're at Bonnaroo in such a happy place. But, man... I saw more bad shows this year maybe than every other Bonnaroo combined. I don't know what it was, but and I can start on Thursday. Thursday, Saba stunk. I mean, stunk. I mean, 20 minutes of a hype guy only to for Saba to get on stage, and I couldn't have been more excited about Saba. His mic was overmodulated. The processing was terrible. I mean, I got none of the emotion and the feeling like I get out of the album. That show just stunk, and I hate it. Donna Missel, I just did not have any connection to whatsoever. Yeah. I thought that was just so put on. Whatever she was doing on stage was just so forced and, I mean, sank like a lead balloon from me.
I got a different take because I only saw part of it. I think I saw four songs and I liked it.
Yeah.
But hearing you guys talk about it, there was a lot of talking, right?
It was so much talking between every song. She tried so hard to be an inspirational sort of like flag bearer, and that's cool. I appreciate the effort, but dude.
Yeah,
it's just not your lane.
There's no point in introducing a song with preaching and then following it up with basically the exact same message, and I did hear that.
Then the biggest miss of Thursday, and this breaks my heart to say it, breaks my heart. We dedicated an entire episode to it. The Grand Ole Opry just didn't work. It didn't work, at least the parts that I saw, and I had to bail early because it was boring me to tears.
Yeah.
Well, now, I heard it. Now, we went to the Camp Redaroo thing the next day, and Mitch said he loved it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people did, and I think that it hit a stride later on in the night, but man, that first 30, 45 minutes, I was just watching TV.
Radio is what we determined. It was like watching a radio show being produced, and radio show with commercials. So there was a lot of dead time between bringing acts on and off. And
yeah,
I get what you're saying.
There was no flow.
I didn't love it, but I didn't dislike it
yeah.
as much as you.
All right. So that was the first day. I mean, that in and of itself, stinkers for me to start the festival was not the way that I wanted to go. But with that being said, the hits, Peach Pit was so much better than I thought they would be.
They
could not have sounded more tight.
Whether it was Johnny B. Good.
That Johnny B. Good cover was terrific.
I remember looking around to all of us thinking, that's a good way to start this festival.
Well, it's just a smart decision for them. Because they're young kids and they chose a song that no matter what age you are, you're going to know this song.
Yeah, it was a good start.
All right, then Friday comes and I, again, I love Cherry Glazer so much. And I love her voice. But boy, there's just something about the tense this year just did not sound right.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I must have been working.
I was totally disengaged because the sound was so weird. If you stepped 5 feet out of the tent, the sound just totally went away. And you could have a basic conversation with someone, and I felt no connection at all.
Unless it was an EDM. Man, that volume.
Really?
I don't remember who it was on Saturday night.
Yeah.
You could feel it. Not just hear it. You could feel it all the way across Center Room.
Interesting. Then I got my mojo back with Crooked Colors. I liked Crooked. It's the first time I have ever seen a show on the other. And since it's become an EDM stage, Crooked Colors is like the only time I've been able to say, you know what, I can go watch these guys because it's an actual band and they're doing stuff that's a little bit more than just the EDM stuff. But Crooked Colors sounded great.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it's just that stage. Maybe the other just is so well, the production's so well done there that, you know, you can't see a bad show, but I've just never seen one there.
It's a little more open too, the way they've oriented it. It sort of throws the music all over camp, so.
That set me back up, and then Parquet Courts, it damn near was one of the best Parquet Courts shows I've ever seen. They were so tight, and they were having so much fun. They threw Jello shots out into the crowd. that was a really, really fun. So now I've got my mojo back on Friday, right? And then to see the crowd for AJR, that was really great.
That was pretty terrific. Yeah, that was great. And they were having a ball. They really were into it.
I was really proud of
that. Man, that goes back to several years ago when that stage had that many people. It was huge.
It was a big crowd. Okay, so then comes...
And I thought they did a really smart show. It was just fun from start to finish.
Yeah, they're fun kids, and I'm really proud of them. So then becomes something that I probably would talk about for the rest of my life. I have never been so engrossed and so captivated by one human being on stage like I was Childish Gambino. I can't stop thinking about this show. It might go down as not just one of the best headlining sets I've ever seen at Bonnaroo, but damn near one of the greatest shows I've ever seen. I knew it was going to be good, and I knew that I was walking in pretty blind as somebody who doesn't know a lot of his stuff, and I sort of kept it that way. I tried to stay away from the zeitgeist of Childish Gambino for a while. I was blown away.
Yeah,
I've never, never, never felt that so euphoric after a show where I had so little expectations going in to begin with. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe what I watched.
That was me. I almost missed it. I ended up somehow separated from all you guys and thought, I'm just going to see how far this badge, these credentials that we have gets me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it got me to the front.
Yeah. Yes, right.
I was.
Were you in the pit?
I was in the pit.
Barry was in the pit.
I was there on the rail,
wow,
remember?
I was on the rail.
No, it was captivating. It was mesmerizing. And the confidence that he had to hold, whatever, 65, 70,000 people with bare minimum. I loved how minimalistic that stage was.
Right. Because there doesn't need to be anything.
There doesn't need to be anything.
It's him. He's the show.
He comes out with no shirt in those
cotton
pants.
Which, by the way, rule number one, if you want me to walk out of your show immediately, take off your stupid shirt. And with him, I didn't care.
No,
I didn't care.
It was exposed. That was the whole point. You know, it was just bare.
Yeah.
But
listen to you being very artsy with that. That's very good.
You'd be a critic for all these years. You learned.
Very good.
You steal a few things. But it was on purpose. It was intentional. And for him to go out in the audience like he did, to start out in the audience with that stage up on the scissor lift, it was very good. There was, as you said many times the next day, there was not a wasted moment.
That's right.
Not a wasted effort.
That's right. I did say that because every step that he made, every dance move that he made, every facial expression that he had, every single thing mattered.
Yeah.
And I love art like that. That's why I like Breaking Bad so much. Every scene matters. Every line matters.
Right.
Dude, he didn't miss a spot. And look, a lot of people can fake authenticity really easy, right? And you can see through that within a few minutes.
Right.
Dude, there's nothing fake about him. There's nothing fake. Either he's the greatest actor that's ever existed on the planet, or he's just giving you an exposed wound, an exposed nerve every second that he's on stage. But, you know, I, for the better part of the first 30 minutes, didn't even know music was playing.
Yeah.
I was so wrapped around his finger that I didn't even know anything else was going on.
Isn't that interesting? When you're hyping this up, talking about how its place in history, I don't remember much of the music either.
That's right. I know.
It was just mesmerizing.
And it's because you don't know much of his catalog. And again, I don't think his catalog matters.
I know. And so I keep comparing that, though it's not fair, to the Brandi Carlile the next day, where the words mattered a lot.
Yes, every word mattered.
Every word. And the raw emotion in her face, whereas he's dancing around and doing, you know, everything physically, she just stood there telling these stories and talking about her wife and her kids and wow, the emotion. Unbelievable.
I was gonna wait on this Brandi Carlile thing, but Brandi Carlile, again, you want to talk about top 10 shows I've ever seen at Bonnaroo, Brandi Carlile's up there.
She's terrific.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe the emotion that was pouring through me. I turned into an absolute baby. When she started talking about it being Father's Day and how she wrote this song for her daughter and she wanted to affect every dad who had a daughter, I looked down the line, right? I had you, Nick, I saw some other... tears just coming down all of your faces. I lost it. I started bawling like a baby.
She like three straight songs. With the next one she introduced by saying she and her wife had gotten in a fight. And so
I've gotten chills about it every time I think about it.
Well,
for a week, I've gotten chills about this Brandi Carlile show.
Well, she had such a great line. She gathered up a bottle of wine or something and went and sat at the piano listening to Joni Mitchell. And then there was a, you know, how did she say it? It's like we all do. And then she kind of paused and she said, maybe it's just the lesbians.
It's all of us.
It was really funny. But
I seriously, every time I talk about this Brandi Carlile show, I get chills. I'm getting chills right now.
It was terrific. And her daughter being 5 years old the day before, but they hadn't told her yet. I mean, she just, I don't know. It was terrific.
And I don't ever want to miss her again. If I have a chance and if I have a chance to see her, I can't for the life of me ever miss her again. That's just one of those feelings that I had that I don't want to miss again. And it was, she's too good.
It was nice after the show, the mayor of Manchester and an executive with Coffee County came out and presented her with keys, and they were introduced by our friend Jeff Cuellar, who brought his son out.
That
which
was
I thought was
that
kind was of really a neat Father's Day thing.
Back to Friday. So I finished up with Childish Gambino, which is a big hit. I thought Beach House sounded great. For all of the problems that the tents had this year, boy, Beach House, I don't know how they fixed it, but boy, they sounded terrific on this. And then we had a little bit of a weird night. We started watching the Super Jam with Grits.
Yep.
And I did something that I've never done in the history of my Bonnaroo life.
You had a nice nappy.
I slept on the ground.
Uh-huh.
Under the screen.
Uh-huh.
In Cineroo.
Uh-huh.
I've never done that before in my life. I feel like I've been baptized by Bonnaroo.
There were several things that happened this year that had never happened before.
How many years, over a decade of doing this, I finally got baptized by the grass in Cineroo.
It was funny because it was like, just put your head down for a minute. You'll be all right. Gone.
I was snoring apparently for about 45 minutes.
Yeah, well, you didn't miss a whole lot. I wasn't overwhelmed by this.
Here's what's crazy about that Super Jam. Now, I didn't, of course, I have no right to say because I didn't watch it. I was asleep. But they added Rainbow Kitten Surprise to the lineup very late. And guess who didn't make it on the stage?
I didn't even notice.
Rainbow Kitten Surprise.
Wow.
They bumped him.
Wow.
Remember when we were talking to Deva Mahal about being bumped from the Super Jam?
Yeah. Wow.
Guess who got bumped? Added late, and Rainbow Kitten Surprise never made it on stage.
Wow. She did. She was great.
Was she?
She was terrific.
Okay. And if I'm wrong about that, somebody tell me, but this is what I've surmised from every Rainbow Kitten Surprise fan that I have. They all say that, nope, didn't make it.
Wow.
Which is nuts.
Because we went from there. Was that the night we went from there to Girl Talk?
Then we went to Girl Talk.
Girl Talk. And I had my moment.
Grandpa Barry had a little bit of a trouble.
So we're sitting in the back, and one of our campmates.
No, we're not. No,
we're standing. Excuse me. One of our campmates disappears. And I'm like, well, wonder where she went.
Whoa. Wait a second. So we leave the Super Jam because we all want to go see. What are you talking about?
Girl Talk.
Girl Talk. Yeah. Sorry. So we all want to go see Girl Talk, which, by the way, the stage looked great.
Yeah.
That was a really, really nice stage production. So we're standing back towards the back. So we're walking towards Girl Talk, and Barry's moving a little slow now.
I'm limping.
It's getting to the point where, I mean, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Barry's pushing it, and he's pushed it all day.
Got the nerve issue.
So we can see it in Barry's face. He's pushing, and we just want to support him. We just want to support our guy. And so one of our campmates disappears for a while and then comes back with what?
A chair.
Yeah.
And I turned to see her coming, and it was one of those deflating moments that I hope none of you ever have to experience. I was both happy and embarrassed and sad.
Well, we didn't want to get all up in the whole Girl Talk experience. We were all pretty beat after that.
Well,
so.
It's kind of it. Hillary and Bradley did go down there because they wanted to dance, and just so happened that was the moment when he decided to give birth to something.
What?
Remember, he started screaming. You don't remember?
I just woke up from a nap. I don't remember a lot.
He started screaming like those old primal scream therapy sessions, or like he was giving birth. He did like 5 times, and Hillary came back. She's like, I don't know what just happened, but that got weird.
Yeah, I don't remember that. So, those are my hits for Friday, and then Saturday rolls around, and you went to see Deva Mahal.
I didn't actually.
Really?
No, I missed.
Big miss on Deva.
I missed, and I was happy to have seen her with the Super Jam, so I didn't feel too bad.
Yeah.
She was terrific. But, yeah, I think that was another work issue kind of thing.
Yeah.
I had a lot to get done.
I really, now that I'm looking at the schedule, I don't know what in the world I did until 4 o'clock that day.
Yeah.
I really don't remember.
That's what I'm, yeah.
I don't.
Again, that's what I mean. There were so many.
We all Saturday had plans. Saturday was the Camp Redaroo. That's
we
what
went
we did.
To Redaroo.
Yeah, we went to the beer exchange.
That
that's
took us,
what.
We left, and again, thanks to Dana and I think Hope.
We were there
Hope
a lot was, longer than we thought because it was so much fun.
Well, it took us 45 minutes to get there.
Good point.
And then we were there an hour. It was fun. And then we came back and it was terrific.
So I'm really upset. I miss Rebel Bucket because I love her. She's got such a great voice. Miss Diva Mahal. Miss Russ and Kelly. Miss Chelsea Cutler. Made it to Unimmortal Orchestra. Loved that. They sounded terrific. Got to see about 30 minutes of Bishop Briggs. And then after Bishop Briggs, we got to talk to her about her show at Bonnaroo. This was our conversation with Bishop Briggs. And then I'll tell you a little story about what happened once the conversation was over. Bishop Briggs on the What Podcast.
First Bonnaroo ever. Let's just start there.
Okay.
Why, you're so excited about it. Why?
Yes.
What about it?
What do you, I mean, what do you know about it? What do you hear about it?
Well, it's such an iconic festival, and it was on my bucket list of festivals to play, and I also really liked the stage I was on, because it had just a sea. It was like a sea of people. That was so unreal to experience. Yeah.
When you say you couldn't afford to even go to music festivals.
Yes.
I mean, what would you have chosen if you had actually had the money?
Well, I have to say Bonnaroo.
Wait, what is?
No. Yes, of course I have to say Bonnaroo. What do you mean?
Where
I'm
are
here.
You from, though?
Where am I from?
Yeah.
So I was born in London, but I grew up in Japan and Hong Kong.
Natural fit with Manchester, Tennessee.
Wow. Yeah.
And and I moved to LA in 2010.
And then when 2010 hits, you start writing songs, and is it an internet thing? How'd you break through? How'd it work?
Oh, well, I was writing songs before that, but I basically started performing around LA for 5 years, each night, every couple of nights. I was also a babysitter, 7 days a week, what up? And I was really fortunate that one of my songs got placed in a Acura commercial during the Super Bowl.
And then the buzz started, right? And the buzz about, it was just a name for me. Like, I kept hearing Bishop Briggs.
Really?
Bishop, yeah. And it was sort of like the Billie Eilish thing. Like, they just kept saying, Billie, the same way they said your name, over and over and over. Like,
she's
and
it, amazing.
And it always came with, man, but she's such an enigma. We don't know what to do with her.
Okay.
And then when I saw the show, I realized it, because you have such a different take on what's happening, and you're doing it in a much different way. We keep saying it over and over on this thing, on this show. It's all about vulnerability, and you're not afraid of being completely vulnerable with everything that you do.
It's my goal. It's my ultimate goal, because I think as a human being, being honest and using your vulnerability as power, I think it just adds a pureness to life that maybe isn't always there.
What about, you were talking about how you got here and that process, on top of that, I think sometimes people forget artists are people. You were a babysitter. You had to make run around money, right?
Yes.
And then the online thing, and then a dream. This thing has been around so long that I think we take it for granted sometimes, that we forget that there are people here who weren't born
when we started.
When it started, and so for you to grow up to want to be at something like this, and then to be here, what's that process been like for you to get from babysitting to here?
Well, during the babysitting days, for the record, I would play at night. So after I finished babysitting...
Take the babies with you. Sure, let's go.
He was 2 years old.
He's going to be fine. Let him run bars.
Oh, my gosh. But to answer your question, for me, this has always been a soul purpose thing. Writing is something that I, of course, want to do, but it's also something that I really need. It's a form of therapy for me and a form of expression. And I always want to have that wide-eyed excitement. And I do get really emotional. I feel as though I have so much more experience of performing to people that are checking their phones, like looking away. Mm-hmm. That to hear people singing along or like showing up in the middle of a hot day, like, and that's the thing. I think I would be grateful regardless, but I kind of have the blessing and the curse of my experience. So, like, you know, I'm not the person that you're going to find complaining about a green room, because there is a green room, okay? There is a green room. Like, that's crazy. Yeah, that's crazy.
It has a file cabinet.
There's a file cabinet with a key here. And there's, by the way, something that they don't really talk about, which can we talk about? I get so much free Topo Chico.
You should.
It's on my rider.
So good.
And I know that means it's technically not free, okay? Comes out of something.
No, it's out of your budget.
It definitely comes out of my budget. But I'm just saying, sometimes, you guys, I get a free Topo Chico.
Nice.
Yeah. So, very exciting.
We all have our thing.
Do you actually go to therapy?
Yes.
Do you?
Yeah.
You get a regular thing?
Yeah, I started going 2 years ago, and it changed my life. It changed every aspect of my life, because I think there's something really mind-blowing about saying things out loud, because sometimes when you say things out loud, you realize how ridiculous they are, that, like, certain people are still in your life, or that you're working with someone that clearly isn't healthy for you, because you can't defend. When you're in that therapy moment,
that's right,
you actually can't defend it.
It was exactly the same moment that I had.
Really?
It changed my life, too.
Yeah.
And there's a stigma around it, like, that we always get like, guys, it's okay.
Yeah.
Just go.
Oh, yeah.
And frankly, somebody like me, I really like talking about myself. And once you do, you realize, geez, I suck.
I mean, if
that
that's your experience, wasn't mine.
Yeah, well, I realize, like, man, the more I talk about myself, I really gotta stop.
Oh, my God. Well, it definitely, it can make you realize why you are feeling the need to prove yourself every time you open your mouth. And I think that's very helpful.
Is that the difference, or where it takes it maybe to another level, to just songwriting? Because songwriting for a lot of people is therapy. It is going to therapy, because you're talking about your emotions.
Right.
But it's the feedback, I guess, would be from fans.
But the
now you're talking to somebody who's analyzing it.
Well, here's the thing. I think sometimes when you tour, so writing, yes, is therapeutic. But then when you tour, it's kind of like the opposite of therapy, because you're just repeating yourself every night.
Mm.
You know, you're not, like, realizing things.
In a way, it could be therapeutic.
That's what I mean, the feedback type
it is,
of thing.
Okay, you know, yes, you guys, it is therapeutic, but I'm also saying it can make you go manic.
Yeah,
because you're reliving.
You're stuck.
I mean, for me,
it's Groundhog
Night. It's Groundhog. Well, in the sense, for me, I am, like, I go back to where I was, what emotion I was feeling. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I do a weekly show with local musicians where they come in and play, and on the several of the last ones, people have written songs about losing a parent or a loved one or something. And, I mean, there's tears that well up. And it's one thing to be, you know, 20 rows back or whatever and feel the emotion of a song, but to be sitting one-on-one, 2 feet away from
acoustic,
somebody, watching them literally talk about a family member they just lost.
Yes.
You really see that vulnerability.
Yeah, and I think
And that what you just said, man, why do I want to do that every night?
But you do, and there is something therapeutic about, I think, what you're saying with the feedback and knowing that by saying it or singing it, that maybe people feel less alone by listening. And that's the kind of my goal, is that hopefully people feel less alone.
So if there was one that hurts the most or is the hardest to get through still, what song is it?
For recently, because it's a brand new song, it's a song called Tattooed on My Heart that I played at the show. Do you guys remember?
Yeah.
You're gonna pretend?
No, which one was it?
Oh my gosh, you guys. What?
I know. So I got 30 minutes in.
Oh my god.
It's Bonnaroo. You got a lot of places to go.
Okay, well.
Well, I'll tell you this. What we didn't have the last time I saw you was a chorus behind you.
Yes, there was
you
a
didn't
choir.
Have that.
There
you
was
didn't
a choir.
Have that last time I saw you.
There was a
you.
Choir that came out, yes. But the second to last song was this song called Tattooed on My Heart. And it was the song that I wrote a couple of months ago. And so it feels so fresh.
Wild.
And same with Higher, the song that had the choir. I think both of those, they are just so fresh. Those are raw for sure.
Interesting to hear you talk about connecting with people, because we just talked to Quinn earlier, and he was saying the same thing. And I've heard it from a lot of artists, is getting that feedback from somebody who says, you helped me, type of thing.
Yes.
I don't know that people start out writing songs for that reason.
They're trying to release what is going on. Yeah. Right. And trying to understand what is happening.
That has to be so powerful to have written something, probably alone in a room, whatever, right. You know, not thinking anyone would ever get it.
And you kind of have to tell yourself that no one will hear it, too.
Right. And then have people come back and say, wow, that really touched me. That has to mean
all the goals. It really is. It's such a dream.
And you've got this thing where it's all authentic. And I think that the reason why you connect as well as you do, at least for me, is because I never feel a second when I'm watching you like, this is such a put on. And it's so rare. We don't have many of them. And we're finally in the industry getting back to that.
I think so too. I think we kind of had a moment where things were a little bit manufactured.
Yeah.
And then I think people started realizing how to do that. Like, maybe it was even like how to edit vocals and how to cut things and how to edit videos and like slow things down, speed things up. That now my hope is that people are wanting like that Amy Winehouse thing, you know, where it was just like, it's just telling the truth. It wasn't protecting the guy. It wasn't protecting herself. It was just telling the truth.
Yeah. And there are people like you doing it. And then on the complete other end, they're like, living like Lizzo. Oh my God, Lizzo. Oh my God, Lizzo is killing it right now.
Her.
For exactly the same reason. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I know the entire Truth Hurts song.
Oh yeah, who doesn't?
Okay, well, I mean, special.
But even I say, like, I walk down the road, it's like, I took a DNA test, I'm 100% that bitch too!
He does, actually.
I am that bitch!
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Yeah, she's someone actually that I look up to so much, and she's just incredible.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. You guys are there. You guys are there. And the industry is seeing you, like, just nibbling at the edges, and it's about to happen. I feel like it's about to happen at some point. So
we've talked about it a bunch. I mean, it's not an accident, right? I mean, it's been a common theme with a lot of artists that we've talked to. And I don't think we intentionally went after that. We just settled on the artists that touched us that way.
Yeah. We do have a common theme, and it's not a rhyme or a reason, but we find the ones that
seem to land on.
So. Hey, thank you.
Oh, thank you guys. Thank you for coming to this luxurious room.
This is the swankiest we've had so far.
You can take Topo Chico for the road. You're sitting on the Topo Chicos, but you can take them for the road.
Who knew that Camp Nut Butter had better accommodations?
Oh, my God.
Bishop Briggs brought out about 200 choir members for this song, and it was absolutely gorgeous. I'm telling you, she just got this voice, and she's got this stage presence. It's, totally engrossing. I don't know. I love her. And the first thing that she did when we walked into her dressing room after the show?
Big hugs.
Big hug.
She might be the nicest person.
She is so sweet, and it's also, she's so nice, it's almost a little bit debilitating. Like, I don't know how to talk to her because she's just so sweet.
She's super, super nice and engaging. Talk to us like we've known her our whole lives.
Forever. Yeah.
Welcomed us into the dressing room.
And she's just so pretty.
She's so pretty.
She's so pretty.
And then you embarrass.
Okay. So this was the second stupidest moment of my Bonnaroo this year. All right. So she's talking about how much she loves Topo Chico, right? She mentioned in the interview that she keeps getting free Topo Chico. It's the best part of the whole experience. I mean, I don't know why she's excited about Topo Chico and not the booze, but whatever. She loves the Topo Chico. All right, so she doesn't have a bottle opener to open the Topo Chico, and I wish you were recording this, but...
Yeah, well, so here's how it happened. So the interview, and this trailer is a trailer in name only. It's as big as the couch and the ice chest full of Topo Chico and a countertop, and that's it.
It's tiny.
I sat on the cooler. That's how small this thing is. So it ends, and... She's like, you guys got to get a Topo Chico. Well, no, we can't take you. No. And I'm starting to pack up my recorder, got my back, and then she hands you one of these bottles and doesn't have a bottle opener.
Doesn't have a bottle opener.
Brad goes frat guy.
Well, she says, she goes something to the effect of, can't you just open it like on the corner of the tank? Can't you just, yeah, I can do that. I did it all the time in college. Watch this. Which, by the way... Hey, watch this is the start of every terrible decision you've ever made. All right, so I go to put it on the corner of the table, and I was going to pop the cap off. You know, you put it to the corner and pop the cap. Well, when I did that, The cap grabbed the side of the panel and ripped the paneling off of the countertop.
Took the molding off.
Right off of the countertop. And she just looked straight down with horror on her face and she said, I'll be charged for that. Okay. All right. Well, if that wasn't bad enough.
Then to fix it, it gets worse.
Well, her manager, whoever was there with her, said she wanted one too. And I was like, well, I'll just open it. And she's like, well, don't use the countertop. I was like, well, I mean, it's already broken anyway. It's not going to matter. So I might as well just use the countertop that's already here. And so when I go to pop the same top, do the same thing, it slips out of my hand. Topo Chico literally flies 4 feet away in the air. Topo Chico is flying everywhere.
Yep.
And the entire trailer now is covered in a bottle full of Topo Chico.
I look down between my feet and there's a spinning bottle of Topo Chico.
Everywhere.
Fizz.
All right. So then I panic and I start looking for some sort of paper towel or something to wipe all this up. And Bishop Briggs just looks me in the eye and she says, just go.
I'll get it. Just go. She's literally now standing by the door. like the hostess who won't, you know.
You think I left on a good term, though? You think we left on good terms?
Memorable.
Okay.
She remembers us. I'm pretty sure of that. I couldn't pack that bag fast enough. It's like, Brad, let's just go, please.
It was okay at the end of it, though. I mean, we're still friends, you think, right?
Yeah, there were hugs.
I don't know if I got a hug.
I got a hug. Okay. But I think it was more of a push.
It's a fine line between hug and push, isn't it?
Hands on the shoulders, push.
Okay, then so Saturday continues. Bishop Briggs then went to Quinn 92. Again, Quinn 92 is so good. We talked to him shortly before his performance. We left Bishop Briggs and then went straight to Quinn 92. Quinn 92 is very underrated. I love him as a lyricist. I think he's writing really interesting, heartbreaking songs, but he's wrapping them up into, you know, fun, youthful hip-hop beats. So
he continued that same theme that we had started weeks ago interviewing Patrick and DeLacy, who didn't make it, by the way, but that whole write what you know, write what you feel, write for yourself.
And don't be afraid of being vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this was Quinn 92, backstage at Bonnaroo, on the What Podcast.
Where are you from?
I'm from Detroit.
Okay.
Yeah, so too far from here, but I live in California now, so I don't get to come over here as often as I want to.
I couldn't be more excited to meet you.
Thanks, dude.
Because I don't know if there's a way to describe you. I've tried to describe you many different ways to many different people, and it never works out.
Yeah.
I don't have a right line.
Yeah.
But all I know is I tell them every time, it doesn't matter what the genre is, it's like nothing but vulnerability.
Thank you, man.
And that's I love that.
Yeah, thank you.
I absolutely love how vulnerable you are.
Thank you so much. I feel like kind of piggyback off what you said. There's never, I struggle with describing to people what my music sounds like, so I kind of call it melting pop, like a melting pot, but it's pop music in a way. I try to be as vulnerable as possible, so I'm happy you picked up on that. So
that's what connects with people, though, right? Yeah, it doesn't matter how it's packaged.
Totally. I think fans are really smart, and, you know, I think if they see something that is a little phony or they don't believe is the real emotion that the artist is trying to convey, I think they'll go on to the next thing. And I think they understand that at least what I'm doing is real and vulnerable, and I think they appreciate that.
And it's so nice. We get lost on process a lot.
Yeah.
So we dork out on stuff like, you know, the process of Bonnaroo, but the process of like writing songs and then getting them into somebody's hemisphere.
Yeah.
How in the world do you transition from what you're doing into like a radio thing? How do you transition to pop culture? How do you transition? How do you break through?
It's really tough because I feel like my music rides a very fine line between mainstream and kind of left the center indie stuff. So
red pill.
Right, there you go.
You're taking a lot of pills.
Yeah, no.
It doesn't really work.
It doesn't work, exactly. Yeah. Some audiences that won't apply to. But I try and not think about it too much, honestly. I just want to stay myself as much as possible. I would rather the mainstream come knocking at my door than me applying to what they're listening to. And try to go that route.
We've had a couple of guests. It's funny, the couple of the guests that we've had on this show have talked about how that vulnerability made him a little bit nervous at first.
Yeah.
And DeLacy was one who said she was writing just for herself and didn't care if anybody else heard it.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah.
That sort of putting yourself out there is kind of scary, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, this last album I put out, it was the first time I ever really opened up about my episodes with depression and anxiety, and but in a weird way it was very therapeutic, and it like you said, like it can be very scary, but I think knowing that thousands of kids out there want to hear that and are going through the same thing, it gives someone like me the courage to talk about it. So yeah.
Is that something you have? Was there an artist that you connected with that said, wow, that song's for me?
Yeah, for me it was Kid Cudi. For me, I thought his whole music was very, very vulnerable, and I can't even give you one song. I think his whole discography is very interesting and very self-reflective, and you know,
you could have said a thousand names. I never would have guessed Kid Cudi.
Really? Yeah. Oh, dude, he's probably my hero in the music in the music world. Yeah, but and just
that's
in,
awesome.
In the sense where he took his like creativity and you know, he just was putting out stuff that nobody was sounding like, but also saying things that nobody was saying. And so he was the first guy I was like, holy shit, you know, this is really special. So, yeah.
You said something to the effect of brittle anxiety and neuroses or whatever, but vulnerability.
Yeah.
But you're married now.
I just got married, dude.
How'd
yeah.
it go?
I guess it was great. Yeah.
Okay.
And I guess things are going well. I just got back from my honeymoon. So
where'd you go?
I went to Italy. So
no shit.
I'm like,
you're high.
Full of
you're
pasta high. And you know
nice.
and
yeah.
marinara and all that stuff. So I'm hopefully not going to throw up today.
He's
on stage,
he's high on honeymoon, guys.
Yes.
He's high on honeymoon.
Yes.
Stay
yes.
That way.
Yes.
Stay
yes.
That way.
So yeah, it's good.
Is there, now that you've sort of written that and you're hearing, I guess, from kids who are thanking you for your music, what does that do? Does it change at all the dynamic for you now? Is there pressure? Is there, you know?
Yeah, I know what you're asking. I think there is a bit of pressure. I mean, for the most part, there's not pressure because I think I've been able to realize that all my fans are so accepting of what I choose to talk about as an artist. But there is a sense of pressure in the sense that I want to keep helping people. And I think now that I've gotten that sort of that feeling of what music can really do for people, like this last album really impacted a lot of people for the better in terms of mental health, and now that I know that's really a thing, I want to keep using music as that kind of tool. So I think there's a sense of pressure that I want to keep you know, connecting with people on that level, but for the most part not really, you know.
Yeah.
I think my fans are so cool and accepting and
just keep
good people. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Into first Bonnaroo.
It's my first Bonnaroo. First time here as a person. Yeah, so I'm super, super psyched.
Coming from Detroit, what had you ever heard of Bonnaroo? What was the idea behind it? The impression, I guess.
Yeah, the impression that I guess I got as an outsider was like a big camping festival, you know, thousands of people just like intense and doing it how festivals should be done. You know,
right.
no showers for 3 days, 4 days. It's like a 5 day festival, actually. So.
I go to a hotel every other day.
I
so,
mean, I mean, look, I'm the same way. I'm not out here camping with the real festival goers. But I really appreciate the fact that, I mean, there's a festival too in Michigan called Electric Forest.
Yep.
And
Electric Forest.
In the same sense, where people really go all out and they just kind of leave their inhibitions at the door, and they just, you know, they just really embrace themselves at the festival for.
Well, they're giving
the
you a lot. They're
yeah,
giving
exactly.
you a lot,
yeah,
and
yeah.
They expect you to give them back just as much. 100%. Isn't that nuts?
They deserve more, you know. So
that's the beauty of this entire experience. Like we know that every person out there is giving every ounce that they have,
totally.
And that's why every show here is so much better.
Totally.
So everybody tries to bring it a little bit different level.
Yep.
Yeah,
I believe
bring
you.
It a little different, and we've talked about the fact that we are here camping. There's a commitment level that's different than some of the others, and so the artist feels that, but also the chance to put yourself in front of fans who, you know, were here to see Gambino.
Yeah, right.
Now
Casey
it's
Musgrave,
your chance.
Somebody
Casey,
else. Yeah,
or John Prine. And
I think
now
that's
you get
the,
to be in front of them, too.
Yeah, I think that's the best thing about festivals is you get to make new fans and perform for people that probably have no idea who you are. But
that's
the beautiful thing about festivals, you know?
And you're staying tonight? You seen the whole thing?
I'm hopefully staying tonight, yeah. We play at 6:30 tonight, and then I'm hopefully going to stick around. I want to see Casey play. I want to see Post Malone. I want to see.
But you're a hip hop guy, so
So
we talk about lanes a lot on this thing. So if you were to find your headliner that you'd follow all the way through the festival, would it be Post Malone?
Of this festival?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, what's so funny is like I'm a big Post fan, but like someone like again Casey Musgraves like can put
two
out such
totally
a.
Different
it doesn't
things.
Really. Yeah, exactly. And I think for me, it's like it doesn't matter what genre it is, as long as the music's just like undeniably special.
Yeah.
I'll chase that person around. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Bowling real world.
Yeah. Exactly. There you go. Uh-huh.
Putting themselves out there.
Well, don't get the eye tattoos. That's all I say.
Nah.
I
don't think I can pull that off. I think Post can get away with that. Not me though. Yeah.
You're doing fine with Michigan.
Yeah. I got a couple small
you
ones.
Get Michigan,
but yeah.
You're fine.
Exactly. I'm actually glad you picked this up. My dad always thought it was a whale because I turned it this way, and he's like, "What the hell is
no,
that?"
No, Dad.
Yeah,
I didn't date her.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
It's nice meeting you. This is really exciting.
Likewise.
I can't wait to you were a late draw for me.
All right.
When I found you, I was really, really excited.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, it was great talking to you guys. Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks
anyway,
so much for your time.
Yeah,
man.
Great.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you so much.
From the Mac DeMarco School of Dressing, Quinn 92, who, you know, sometimes I do want to shake some people that I really like, and I want them to just start taking their stage presence seriously. I like him so much, but you got to put on some clothes, bro. You got to put on something that makes me seem like you're actually caring about being here. If that's the only, that's the only critique that I have of him. Other than that, I loved it. I really did love it a lot.
Yeah, he was great. He was great. Great interview. But I know what you're saying when he walked up. I was like, okay, where's...
I was calling his manager. He was standing right next to me, and I didn't even notice. Both of them. I'm like, oh my God, that's Quinn. And it's because he's like... I thought he was going to change clothes when we talked to him, but no, that's exactly what he wore.
He is who he
all
is.
Day. You know, all
right. He is.
So then the national show was tremendous. I absolutely loved it. It just keeps getting better. That light show is so good. And then Post Malone. Now, I'm not going to say anything bad about the Post Malone show, but let me say this. After a night of Childish Gambino, watching what he did on stage by himself, Post Malone, like, I spent 20 minutes with this, and I'm like, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah,
I didn't care. That's how good Childish was. I could have pulled a Paul McCartney and just left after the Childish show. It was so good. But Post Malone is... You're a hip-hop show, and you're standing there by yourself. I saw that last night, and I saw it done 10 times better.
Well, speaking of, and we had mentioned this last week, we were going to talk about it. I'm not into the hype man thing. If you got to eat up 10 minutes of your show with a hype man, I mean, I get the idea of it, but I don't like it, and I don't like the hip-hop shows with somebody yelling, stand up and scream.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, man, I've been hearing that for 35 years.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to come up with something different and better.
Yeah. After Post Malone, a lot of people did Lonely Island. You know I didn't. And then Claro. I did Claro instead because she's got something. She's got something that just tears me apart how good she is. I'll be honest, though. That was a very weird time for her. I don't understand the idea of putting that sound on at 12:20 at night. Mm. I liked it, frankly. I liked it a lot more than a lot of people I was with. But again, it's a timing issue.
Right.
I don't think they did her any favors by putting her on at 12:30, 12:45 at night. It just is not the sound that I'm looking for at that point. So, you know, I don't know how many people felt about Claro. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I missed it because I'm remembering now, back at camp.
Well, then
we are playing host.
Yeah, and then we left Claro, and we had some people back at camp that we wanted to see and hang out with. And boy, did we hang out.
Yes, we
did.
Oh,
my goodness. It was a proverbial shit show. Absolute disaster. So we take
a lot of fun.
Former guest of the What podcast, Jim Burris, who is one of the guys at Columbia Records. Then we take him. I don't think he wants anybody to know this, but I'm making it clear. We took him to Gucci Mane.
Gucci Mane. His son, Logan. Yep. It was, 2:30? We head on over to Gucci Mane.
And Barry didn't even need a chair.
Didn't he? Oh, I was dancing.
So did Gucci
Mane.
Then we spent some time at the Calliope stage.
Calliope stage. We watched the fireworks there. That was a lot of fun.
And then that was pretty much it for the rest of the night. And then we got to Sunday, and Sunday set up essentially like I thought it was going to set up, in a lot of stuff that if I see it, I see it. If I don't, I don't.
That was a weird day because it was predicting rain early. And I have to admit, I was considering leaving because I was not going to stay and fight rain.
Yeah, I had to keep you there. I literally had to chain you to camp.
And
to get you to
then
stay.
It cleared up, and what a horrible decision that would have been had I left. I would have missed Ken. I would have missed Brandy Carlisle.
Yeah, we had Ken come by the camp. And again, if you haven't listened to it, pause this, go back and listen to it. I'm going to pass everything before Brandy Carlisle because none of it matters. Yeah. I mean, it could have been, it doesn't matter who's there. That Brandy Carlisle show was absolutely unbelievable. And if you're in and around Chattanooga, figure out a way to get Moon River tickets because she's coming to Chattanooga. And even if you're not, find a way to see her. Because there's something religious that happens to you at that show.
Very, very good. And she has the... We did have a kind of a laugh because the twins, so the bass player and guitar player that play for...
Mm-hmm.
Remember I said they kind of creepy looking. And
yeah.
Nick said they look like the twins from The Matrix.
And then...
they are very, very talented and a big part of the show.
And then it was sort of like the rest of the night was just... total eye roll for me the rest of the day. Look,
I don't even remember.
I like Little Dicky, but that show that was stunk. It stunk.
Again, the hype man. He didn't even. He started late, came out late or later than advertised. Then 10 minutes of hype man.
I mean, cool. It's funny.
That's fine.
But you took your pants off. How funny can it be if you keep taking your pants off?
And then he did the national anthem, which I'm not exactly
because he doesn't have material.
That's the only thing I could think.
He talked for 15 minutes in between every song because he has no songs.
Right. Right.
And then you do, then this is what makes me so mad. The biggest song that you have, Pillow Talk, you did 90 seconds of it. It's a 9-minute song. You did 90 seconds of it. It's the one that everybody wants to hear.
And dismissed it with a simple, that song's 11, or the real song's 11 minutes. Like, I'm not going to do the other.
I want to hear 11 minutes. Then exactly. Cardi B. I don't even want to talk about Cardi B because something really bad happened at Cardi B. We saw somebody fall out and get escorted out. It was a very traumatic thing. So we left Cardi B early. We eventually,
you guys came back pretty traumatized.
We were really traumatized and we just needed to reset. But once we reset, and everybody's heard about the Cardi B nonsense, so there's no reason to get back into it. But then I went back and saw my first Phish show. And so now I can physically now say I've been to see Phish, and I stayed for it. I gave it a good 90 minutes. I gave it every shot in the world, 90 minutes. So if you're a Phish fan, you tell me how that Sunday show went for you. I'm not going to give you my opinion on it. I want to hear what you have to say. Tell us at thewhatpodcast.com because I have nothing to say about it.
I don't even remember what I did Sunday night. I know I didn't go to that.
Yeah, so there you go. That was it. And then Monday came around, and you know, it's been a very, very slow re-entry into society.
I came back with the Bona flu.
Yeah,
so
you
just
felt terrible.
Oh, I was awful Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah.
But even at that, I don't quite know how to describe this one. It was good. It was a great festival. I'm looking forward to next year. I'm trying to make mental notes on what to do differently. But it was a different one.
It was a different one because there were so many highs and to me so many places where I was really underwhelmed.
Yeah,
underwhelmed in places that I didn't want to be underwhelmed. And I said this in one of the episodes, in the episode from camp. I missed on more of my can't misses, and I misjudged so many shows that I thought were going to be good. I feel like I wasted a lot of time. I feel like I wasted and went to the wrong shows, and that's when I get really irritated with myself.
Agreed. And I don't know how it gets fixed. I mean,
you don't. It just, you you pick one and you go with it. And if you don't like it, you go to another one.
Right.
And, you know, my problem was every time that I went to go to another one, that one sort of stunk too.
Yeah.
And eventually just wore me down. And I just started going to camp. And that's fine. It's totally okay.
We had lots of laughs.
You know, I hate that I miss Mac DeMarco. I hate that I miss a John Prine. But I can't be too upset about
it. You can't do it. No, you can't beat yourself up.
Right.
I do it every year.
Well, good year. Good season.
Yeah,
we should talk about next year.
We should mention the mailbox. The voices you guys heard at the opening of the show. We had a mailbox at Camp Nut Butter this year, and it got a lot of laughs, which we hoped. We got stickers, we got candy, we got 2 cigarettes, jewelry, and I had put a tape recorder in it.
Yeah.
Number one, it didn't get stolen.
Good.
And we actually had 2 people leave voice messages, so that was kind of
fun. All right, well, let's finish season 2. With the other voice message that we got from Camp Nut Butter's mailbox. All right, we'll talk to you soon, I guess, when we figure out what else to talk about, all right?
Yeah.
All right, see ya.
All weekend.
I haven't really
either. We're live, folks.
I live in Colorado, but, like, I don't know.
We're live.
What?
We're live.
Wow.
Hello,
oh, damn.
Oh, America.
That's unfair. I was not ready
Bonnaroo
for this.
2018.
Cardi B was the best thing that ever happened.
Is this recording?
It is.
No, it's definitely not recording. It's recording.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I meant it definitely is recording.
Did I say not?
Well, have a good day.
A good day.
Good night.
Or a good night.
Good year, I guess.
Good year. Aww. Good life.
Happy room. Aww.
Happy
Pick
room.
Up your garbage.
Till
Pick
next
up your
time.
Fucking garbage.
Recycle.
Recycle.
And
yes. Clean vibes will find you.
Compost.
Yeah. Compost.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
If you can find your neighbor.
Through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter.
Yay.
With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.